This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
I feel like people don't see something they're looking for and then they just give up. They're like, oh, there's not a community for investors in Wichita, Kansas, right? Or wherever, right? They're like, what you guys have in Chicago or what they have in Atlanta, that doesn't exist here. They don't do anything. And so I'm like, no, if it doesn't exist, then it's your responsibility to create it. Because just how you're looking for something, there's other people that are looking for something too.
Hey, hey, welcome to the Color of Money podcast. I am Emmerich Peace. I have my co-host, Bo Nikiti, Daniel Dixon, and our special guest, Rashana Scott. I guess Rashana Scott is just, I'm trying to figure a word to talk about her. She's just a phenomenal young woman. And I say young because I got her probably about 30 years almost. And so I can say the word young. That's why they call me Unc. In any event, Rashana, she has this great real estate business. She has a great investing business. Then she has an investing community. And I'm sitting here and I'm amazed because the first time I talked to her, I listened to all the things she did. And I said, you are how old again? I had to like take a double take on this thing. And so Rashana's out of Chicago, Illinois. She does personal investing, community investing. She has a real estate team. She is all things real estate, and she is like the social media queen. I see her everywhere on social media. So we're in for a treat today, and I'm just excited to be here with you today, Rashana, and I'm pretty sure my other guests are because they're accomplished in their own right by the same way. So we just want you to pour into us, and we have a great session, and just talk about you, who you are, what you do, how you help the community, and give our listeners something to think about and want to pour into.
Sean, I just say, like, I always ask, you know, the wise old Unc, we always want to understand, like, how do people get in this business? I'm always fascinated by it. How did somebody with your talent, skills, how'd you end up in real estate?
Yeah, well, first off, I'm very excited to be here and honored to be here. Definitely follow all of you and admire what you guys have accomplished as well. So I'm just very grateful to be even excited to be here and share my journey. But I first got into real estate like many folks did. I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was about 18 or 19 or so. And right away, I knew like, okay, I'm going to be in real estate. But even prior to that, I remember I was maybe about a sophomore in high school and we had a career day. And at that career day, I remember the guy, he worked for AT&T and he was a manager at AT&T. And he said, even though, you know, I'd worked there, I don't depend on them to take care of me and my family. He also owned 400 vending machines across the city of Chicago. And he talked about the process of filling it up, you know, how much he makes when it's empty and things like that. And I remember vividly that being my first introduction to just entrepreneurship. Prior to that, I thought the highest level of success, you know, that you could go was just being a manager at a company, right? Being a manager, a supervisor, a director. And at first, I was the one that I was thinking like, okay, yeah, that's probably what I'll do or what I'll be someday. And then fast forward a couple of years, like I said, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which really isn't a real estate book, right? It's more so overall a mindset book. And it talks about, you know, just the mindset that you have in terms of creating the life that you want to live. And so in high school, I was like, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, but I didn't know what I was going to do yet. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I said, okay, real estate is going to be my way. So then I went ahead, got my leasing license, because that was something that I could do right away at 18 in the state of Illinois. And I remember just going to all the workshops and conferences. I attended all the three-day weekends that the gurus, you know, flew in town for and did all of those events. I mean, I was a young, broke college student. I was living at home and I was borrowing my mom's car to even go to some of these events. But I was just so eager to learn, you know, because I'm like, hey, you know, I didn't grow up at the dinner table talking about, you know, these things that I'm learning and reading. And I'm like, you know, people around me, didn't know either, right? And so then I knew that it was going to be my responsibility to take what I was learning, implement what I was learning, but then also take it back to the community. And that was in my early 20s.
Wow. What was the start like? How'd you actually make that entry into the business? Did you start selling real estate?
Yes, I had a really good friend who ended up being a mentor who we went to church together, and she was a very successful realtor. And I told her, I was like, you know what? I think I want to try this real estate thing. So she told me to get my leasing license. I worked under her for about a year. I did leasing, and I very quickly realized that that's not what I wanted to do. I was like, you know, I was working full time. I was in school full time and doing real estate on the side. But it at least allowed me to get my feet wet. And my passion was really on the investing side of real estate and figuring that out. But again, you know, being young and not having, you know, the resources, what I did have was the time. So I was going to a lot of these programs. I signed up for this Guru program. I put $20,000 on a credit card. I didn't even know I could get approved for $20,000, but I put $20,000 on a credit card because I had good credit. That was one of the things that I also learned early on, right? Like, you know, the differences between good and bad debt, right? And leveraging credit, you know, to get ahead and things like that. So I spent $20,000 on a Guru program, and then I immersed myself into learning how to invest in real estate. My very first investment was in 2015. I was an angel investor on somebody else's project, but I coined the term mentor hacking because even though I didn't have the experience or all of the funds to run my entire project, I was able to invest into somebody else's. But because I was an investor, I was able to show up, you know, at the job site whenever I wanted and ask questions and learn. And so that was probably one of the best ways that I could get my feet wet and get started and get involved. And then from there, I partnered with a number of individuals, did a number of flips, you know, in the Chicagoland area, and did some investing for quite some time. And then I knew that I wanted to go full time into real estate. And so I quit my job. Well, I got licensed. I went back and got my broker's license in 2017. And then in 2019, I went full time in real estate and haven't looked back since.
Now, Rashana, it's impressive and inspiring the amount of drive that you have and the amount of things that you continue to take on and continue to grow with. Where did that come from?
Great question. You know, it's funny. So I am one of seven, and I am the only entrepreneur in my family.
Where do you fall? Middle?
I'm number six. So I'm the baby.
Yeah. So you had to fight for your food, fight for your attention.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's so funny because I vividly remember my mother saying that I came in this world grown. And I think it was a matter of me probably just trying to, you know, trying to keep up, right? Trying to keep up with my older siblings and things like that. You know, trying to prove myself or prove my worth to show, you know, that I'm not just a baby. But yeah, that's really where it came from. It wasn't, you know, when people ask all the time too, they're like, well, did you have other entrepreneurs in your family, other business owners that you learned from? No, I did not. But the second I started getting exposure to things that were happening in other communities and things that were happening outside of my household, I think the drive really came from just knowing that there was a lack. Even like I said, you know, learning in my early 20s that I could get approved for a business credit card at $20,000. I had no idea, right? No one was ever talking about that. And so knowing that I had these resources available to me, like I said, I then took it on as a responsibility. Like, more people need to know about this. Like, there's a better way that we could be living and learning and pouring back into our community. So I think that also fueled the drive to keep going, because once I was exposed, and that's why I say, you know, exposure is one of the most important things that we can give, you know, give back, right, to our community, to the young folks. The second, you know, you can expose people that there's more than just, you know, these four walls of these city limits, you know, that's when the mind expands and, you know, who knows, you know, what you can accomplish.
That's kind of interesting. I love that thing about being next to the youngest, because I was the same way. And I believe that part of it is that you grow up watching everybody else and you want to do what they do. And then you learn vicariously through them. You don't want to repeat the things that they did. And in my case, they told me, don't do what we did because that's not the right way. And then that drive just changes something a little different. And like you said, you know, just exposing people to information, exposing a mind expanded will never contract back to the same size. So you can't go back. And I love that spirit about you. Here's the thing, like your business. When you came into this business, you said you started as a solo agent and you were investing at the same time. So what you're saying is you were buying what you were selling.
Well, not immediately, not right away. Okay. So I first started as a leasing agent in my early 20s. So I did have a mentor for about that first year. And then I started investing. Yeah, so I did not renew my leasing license. I was like, this is too much running around for pennies. I was like, but then I was like, okay, well, let me see what this investing side of the business is about. And then I was really hustling in that. And the whole time, my entire 20s, while I was really trying to figure out this real estate thing, like people ask me all the time, well, how'd you get started? How'd you get where you are now? It was like 10 years of trial and error. Or really like 7 to 8 years of trial and error, like really just putting things out there and trying and seeing, you know, what would stick, seeing what would work. Because at the same time, I was still going to school to get my degree. I was still working full time, right? I still had to make money. And I guess even with that, I knew at the same time, like there were certain things that I was just learning about, again, the principles of debt, the principles of leveraging your credit and things like that. I vividly remember asking my mother, because I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm turning 18 soon. I want to get my first credit card. How do I build good credit? And I remember her telling me that she didn't know, right? And so even things like that, like I said, just fueling that, okay, there's people around me. There's something out there. There is a better way to live out there. And I wanted to figure it out. I think it was that tenacity, right? That curiosity. So not only did I want to figure it out, but again, I wanted to figure it out so I could learn and help more people. So I started investing and had some success in investing, and then decided that I wanted to go full time in real estate. So then I went back and got my license because I was like, you know what? I didn't get my license to be a top producer, to have a team or any of that. I got my license to do more investing. I was like, well, I just want to have access to the MLS and I help a family or friend here and there. And then here we are.
It's interesting, that sort of drive and energy to learn and figure it out. Can you tell us a little bit about what were some of the key moments of learning and figuring it out? Like, what were some of the things you did to learn and figure it out when you jumped into real estate sales? You know, what were some of the key pivotal moments that were part of that journey?
Yeah, I would say, you know, one of the biggest lessons that I learned, even right before getting going with the sales business on the investing side, was the business partnerships and the relationships, right? And the importance of having your paperwork in order, having your contracts in order, and having tough conversations up front. You know, I still talk about this literally to this day when we talk about group economics and things like that, because I truly believe in group economics and building and growing with one another. But I talk about how important it is to have those tough conversations with potential business partners up front and making sure that everything, you know, is documented, right? And I feel like that goes without saying, but sometimes you got to say it again and again and again and again, right? Because we're having conversations with our friends and our family and people that, you know we like and we trust them. But at the same time, like, you know, when you're going in to get started with the business, you have to go in with the business mindset, right? Like friendship, family, all that goes out the window. What is in our contract? You know, what does it say? You know, what happens if we lose money? What happens if you don't do your job? What happens if I don't do my job? Like clearly defining roles and responsibilities. That was one of the biggest lessons that I learned in flipping properties, right? Because from there, like I partnered with a number of contractors because I had design experience and I could leverage my relationships to find off-market deals and things like that. But I knew I wasn't an expert at construction and I didn't care to be. But I was like, you know what? I can partner with somebody who has the experience and we can make some deals work. So I gained some experience there and learned a lot there as well.
You said something, you alluded to it. You didn't say it. You kept saying, I learned lessons. I heard what you were saying. And a lot of folks, they want to go into business and they want to have partnerships. I'm a strong proponent of partnerships, just the right partnerships. And so if you could say something about partnerships that people should know as a don't do, just give us something really quick. Because we always talk about the successes. We don't talk about the minimal success that we have sometimes. So what was your biggest lesson in partnerships?
Alignment, I would say, is definitely making sure that you're in alignment with the people that you are doing business with. Like I said, you have to sit down. I have a friend right now who we're talking about doing some business together, and we put the idea out there, but we actually have a scheduled meeting on the calendar, you know, in a couple of weeks to hash everything out, right? We have to talk about everything up front and make sure we're in alignment first, because when the idea first comes up, right, everybody's excited and they're like, yeah, we're going to do this. I want to sit down and I want to talk about everything. And I think that's the thing. People are afraid to talk about the what ifs, you know, in the end. Right? Let's talk about the end before we can start. So that's definitely been, you know, one of the biggest things is making sure that you're in alignment, making sure you're having those tough conversations up front, getting everything documented. Again, like I said, you know, what happens if we lose money or when we lose money, you know, are you covering that? And again, roles and responsibilities, right? And how do you measure that, right? Is this a 50-50 partnership, you know, in terms of responsibilities? There's partnerships that are supposed to be 50-50 splits on profits, but the energy and the effort might be more like 70-30, 80-20, right? And that's the reason why partnerships and things fail and people fall out, because then they're feeling like, well, I'm doing majority of the work and this and that, right? Because there were things that were left unsaid.
Right. Well, and that's just managing expectations.
That's good marriage advice, too.
It is. And what I learned about that is no deal is ever 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
It's never 50-50. And you just have to stick to whatever your agreement was. That's your agreement was. Sometimes you're going to do a little more and sometimes you're going to do a little less.
I just wanted to double click on something that Rashawn said earlier, which was she talked about group economics. You threw out this term, group economics.
Yes.
And I was going to ask, like, what does group economics mean to you? And how is that at play in our community?
Yes, yes, yes. So we've seen it at play a number of different times, right? Some have gone good. Some have gone not so good, right? And like Emory said, you know, I believe in partnerships and I believe in group investing. I believe in, hey, let's pull our funds, our credit, our finances, our resources together. Like I truly believe that we can do more together. But again, you know, we have to have it all lined out from the very beginning, you know, the proper way. But I truly believe that, you know, you could just do more with more.
So group economics being the idea that people are pooling their resources to make a difference, right? And I think, like you said, a really interesting piece of this is group economics can have a positive impact. Group economics can also hold us back. So if we're surrounded by a bunch of people that aren't able to invest or aren't investing or have a different mindset, we're experiencing the downside of group economics. And we have this ability to harness the power of group economics when we can get aligned and move forward. And I think the power of what you're saying and what you're doing in your life every day is trying to find how we get people together to take what might seem like small resources, but when put together, they can accomplish a ton.
Yeah, because the majority of my flip business, I've done some flips on my own, but the majority of my flip business has been with other people. So I've raised private capital. I've worked with investors. Like I said, I've partnered with contractors, right? And again, believing that we could do more together. And like you said, you know, just having access to more opportunities as well, right? From pooling resources and people, you know, and funds together and for the greater good, right? Community development, personal development, business development, you know, and things like that.
You said earlier that you'd sort of advanced your personal investing business from trying all these different things, from wholesaling and flipping, and that recently you'd focus more on buy and hold a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit how you got there and, you know, how you see the differences in those different places along the spectrum of investing?
Yeah, you know what? Getting there was actually easy, right? Because it was really just a matter of practicing what I preach and knowing that, you know, you can't pass down flip profits, right? Or wholesale profits and things like that. So it was a matter of getting my feet wet and getting in the game, but also starting to think about the legacy, right? And the generational wealth and what I wanted to leave behind and things like that, right? And what I, you know, really had to my name outside of other people, because even though it was great that I've had the experience of working with other people, then it was like, okay, it's time to, you know, do some things for yourself and really, you know, have some things that you can really call your own.
Now, Rashawn, what I've noticed with a lot of people is when they get ready to flip their first house, they can't.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
Understand or see how to evaluate the deal. Do you have like a three or four step process that you go through and on what you look for that can help our listeners take down their first opportunity or feel comfortable about evaluating their first opportunity?
I have like a 4F formula, right? Like I think, you know, every deal, you know, you have to figure out how you're going to find it, fund it, flip it, and then really what's your exit, right? So there's four components to a transaction when I'm looking at, you know, whether it is a buy and hold or even a flip. And I tell people that there's value at each stage of that process, right? Finding the deal, there's value there, right? You can find an off-market deal, or you can find a great deal, or you can find, you know, something that has a ton of equity. There is value there, right? So even if you don't have money, credit, or anything, but you can bring a great deal, right? We all know that, right? You make money in real estate when you buy. So finding it. Next thing is funding it, right? So how are you going to fund this deal? Is it going to be your own finances and resources? Are you going to fund it with other people's finances and resources? A lot of what I did, you know, in my flips, we leverage hard money. And then I would bring in a private investor, someone who was a debt investor that just wanted maybe like a 10 to 12% return. But we would bring them in and then we'd be able to do the project, right? So now I'm in control of a project and the asset with no money out of pocket, right? Because I've been able to leverage hard money or leverage, you know, lines of credit and things like that. And then I'm able to bring people into the deal who have an interest of investing in real estate. But again, maybe they don't have the resources or the time and all those things, right? And then the next component is the management, right? The management of the rehab of the construction, which again, you know, a lot of the deals that I had done previously, I brought in an expert for that, right? So there's value there. And then, of course, who's going to manage the dispo of the deal, right? What's the exit strategy? Are you going to flip it? Are you going to hold it? Is it going to be an Airbnb? Is it going to be a short-term rental? You know, what's going to be the exit and who's going to be responsible for that? The other thing, too, that I think is important to add, you know, when people are running their numbers and taking a look at potential deals, everybody's looking at like the ARV, but I tell people, don't forget to check the as-is value as well, right? Because you need to know whether or not you're overpaying for that property. Everybody talks about the ARV, the ARV, the ARV, but what is the as-is value of that property to make sure you aren't overpaying for it? If you don't have construction experience, I think this is one of the biggest things that intimidates people. They're like, well, how do I know what I'm looking at? How do I know, you know, how much work it needs and things like that? I tell people, you know, get as many quotes as you can, get at least three quotes, but get labor only quotes, right? Because then you can control your material costs, right? And you can find investors to cover your material costs as well. One of my projects, we did that before, right? We had all of our stuff, you know, purchased at Home Depot, and they just put it on like a business credit card at 0% interest, you know? But I tell them to get labor only quotes, you know, from the contractors. So then you can truly understand what the difference is in the bids that you're trying to compare, right? Because if you're lump summing labor and material quotes together, then you don't have a true comparison of how much is it actually going to cost me to flip this bathroom, right? One contractor is saying 5, one is saying 10, one is saying 15. Okay, where's the differences here, right? With no materials included. So that's the other thing that I tell people to really pay attention to and to look out for as well. But I mean, there's so many more things that we can go into, but I would say, I think that's the gist of understanding, looking at a deal, how to evaluate a deal. You know, when you're looking at a certain neighborhood, what are the average days on market, taking a look at, you know, how long it's taking for things to sell. And then also too, oh, this is key. This is the last thing I'm going to say, have multiple exit strategies, right? So if you are trying to flip, that is your end game. And what if you don't sell? Right. Again, having these tough conversations up front is going to be important. This is our goal and all of this sounds great. But what if we can't get to our desired end goal? Then what? Then what are we going to do? Right. So it's best to have that plan already laid out and talked about up front.
You're absolutely right. Everyone thinks about after repair value. It's the dream. We're going to sell it for 200K. We're going to make this massive profit. How do you evaluate the as is value? Is it a percentage of what we think it is today minus work that needs to get done, or how do you evaluate that?
I run comps, right? And I tell people, you know, who don't have access to the MLS, you guys can, they can use like a Redfin, or they can use PropStream or PropWire, which is actually free and it does everything that PropStream does. But you can run comps, and I tell, you know, leverage the resources that you have, go on Google, go online, look on the internet and try to get pictures. I can pretty much eye the as is value by, you know, I'm looking at comparables, but I'm looking at pictures, right? Does the condition of this property, you know, how does it compare to other properties that have sold in the area, similar price point, similar condition? And that's the main thing, you know, that I tell people to look at, you know, look within a mile radius, within the last couple of months, you know, we want to see what sold. And, you know, there are some formulas out there that are like, you know, 70% of the ARV or 65% of the ARV, and things like that, that I know a lot of people use. I'm more so just looking at what are the actual numbers, right? So if the as is value, I'm looking at it, I'm thinking like, okay, they're asking 60 or 70, but really, you know, comps show that properties in this condition are selling for about 30 or 40. And then, you know, like you say, you add your construction or your rehab on top of that. And then you also should have a good spread in terms of what your all-in costs are going to be and your, you know, your profit. But all-in costs are not just purchase price and your rehab, right? If you have a loan, you're going to have holding costs, you know, and things like that, that you want to consider as well. And then don't forget the contingency, right? Because I've experienced, right, what you thought was going to be maybe a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 profit. One of my rehabs at one time, it just kept getting broken into. It was like the rehab from hell. It was like, it just kept getting broken into. They cut the power to cut the electricity. We had a bad flood. The sump pump went out, so it flooded. The AC unit was stolen. You know, all the things, yeah, right?
That was the neighbor.
So just making sure, you know, that you have enough room in your deal to experience these things. You know, like for me, I have this saying like, hey, I'll pass on a good deal and I'll hold out on a great deal. But that's because I've worked with good deals, and after some time, they weren't so good anymore, right? So it has to be a great deal for me in order for me to even, you know, take it down.
I love what you're saying, because you are describing in great detail in this flipping space the ultimate paradox of being an entrepreneur. You have to see possibility to be an entrepreneur. You never take the risk to go do something. But here's the problem, and it's one of the things you gain with experience. When you have experience, you realize, I love it, you always got a wholesaler and they're saying, it's, you know, here's the purchase price, here's the ARV, this much work, you're good, right? But you just broke down all the things that can and will go wrong. And the answer is, you got to have the optimism to see the possibility, but you got to have the realism to know that between point A and point B, there's going to be a lot of stuff. And I see so many people get messed up, not just in flipping, in entrepreneurial endeavors in general, because you know what happens? They commit to a cost and they hope for a revenue. And guess what? The cost shows up as what it is, or maybe a little bit more, but they're pretty close on the cost. And the revenue was just their aspiration. So that's where you said, hey, know the real price today, and then know that there are going to be some things you don't know that are going to happen here.
And you know what, Bo? That comes back to being emotionally connected to the outcome. That's the biggest issue. And we know that in this market right here, it's a lot of people who are emotionally connected to the outcome. That's why the price have gone up so much.
Yeah, we get excited about what can happen and we forget. And I love what you're breaking down, because you and your, even in your short career, are breaking down this great maturity around, that's the difference between the seasoned entrepreneur and a person who's just starting. They bank it all on that emotionally attached outcome. You see, the seasoned entrepreneur still has that attachment to the crazy outcome, or else they wouldn't try. But they know, oh my gosh, all this stuff is going to happen in between.
Well, I think there's also, you talked about the value in these four different areas. And there's a lot of people, team members, other people that want to invest with me. And I kind of sit back, go, what is the value exactly? But when you can understand finding it has its value, funding it has its value, the project management has its value, or completely handling the dispo, it created a whole new conversation for me with people around me going, okay, well, where, what lane are you operating in, and where, how are you bringing that value to me in this partnership? And partnerships are so important in understanding where is your value, where is your lane, and then how can we do this together where everybody still wins, that's not borrowing the money, that's not just finding the deal and so on. I think that was really powerful.
You know, and Rashawn, this whole conversation really brings us to a place about flipping in heels, because there's a wealth of knowledge And what is this whole thing of flipping in heels? Because that sounds like a movement. I don't wear heels. However, I'm interested in what this flipping in heels. Now, it'd be kind of crazy, a size 15 pump. So what's this whole thing about flipping in heels?
Yes. So it is a movement. So let me acknowledge that. So flipping in heels was created because, as I mentioned, you know, my love and my passion regarding real estate is and has always been on the investing side of the business. I've grown to love the sales business, you know, for what it has become today. But initially, you know, my first love and interest has been on the investing side of real estate. And I remember, again, you know, early on in my career, my early 20s and even mid 20s, wanting to take, you know, what I was doing in investing to another level. And I was looking for someone that I could look up to. I was looking for a mentor. I was looking for her, right? Who was that Black female entrepreneur that was out here just killing it in the real estate game? And I couldn't find her, you know, and thankfully the social media, fast forward, you know, there's tons of women killing it everywhere, right? But I couldn't find her. And I was like, well, you know what? I guess it's, you know, again, my responsibility to create her. And then, you know, lo and behold, I feel that I became her, right? For a lot of other women who, you know, have told me that, you know, I'm an inspiration and they look up to me and things like that. But it was really just created because I felt like there was a lack of women developers and women, you know, landlords and just women who were decision makers in this very male dominated industry. I was like, you know, we can do more than just show up in a skirt and show and open a door, right? And show a house, right? Like the majority of my sales today in my sales business, I work primarily with investors. So it's funny, you know, I do wear heels sometimes, but more times than not, I'm walking vacant, you know, in abandoned properties, right? And doing the dirty work and things like that. And right. And that's a different side of real estate. And then through the community, you know, I've been able to just connect with so many phenomenal women worldwide, but I've been able to bring them into the community, women who have inspired me and who I've been able to look up to and learn from. And I've been able to bring them and put them, you know, on a Zoom in front of women and get their questions. And so women general contractors, right? And like I said, developers and the list goes on and on and on. I mean, we've had the past 3 or 4 years, you know, different guest speakers and over 80 episodes of just learning, coaching, training and developing women. But that was just really what it how it started. It was like, man, you know, I was looking for her and I was like, where is she? But again, you know, nowadays I'm grateful to definitely have so many women, you know, as my peer who are really killing this thing as investors. But yeah, that was how Flipping in Heels first started.
So right now in Flipping in Heels, what's the overarching objective of Flipping in Heels?
Yeah, to continue promoting accountability, you know, empowerment, and really bringing real life resources to women nationwide. There's so many success stories that we've had from that, whether it was in the lane of being a realtor, or being an investor, becoming a developer. The biggest thing that I learned with Flipping in Heels, and I had no idea that it would grow into, you know, what it is today. But what I tell people time and time again is that where there is lack, there is opportunity, right? And so wherever you don't see something, you know, I feel like people don't see something they're looking for and then they just give up, right? They're like, oh, there's not a community for investors in, I don't know, Wichita, Kansas, right? Or wherever, right? They're like, oh, that what you guys have in Chicago or what they have in Atlanta, that doesn't exist here, right? And then they don't do anything. And so I'm like, no, if it doesn't exist, then it's your responsibility to create it, right? Because just how you're looking for something, there's other people that are looking for something too, right? But you have to be that trailblazer, of course, you know, in order to create it. But we have a women's membership community that's a mentorship opportunity. And again, you know, we bring resources, we put resources right in front of women. There's many banks and different institutions that are out there that have programs, right, for minority business owners and developers and women. And so my whole goal is to bring the resources to them, put it in front of them, and then help them get to the next level of their career, right? Their investing journeys, you know, creating generational wealth. You know, a lot of these women have kids and they want to leave a legacy and things like that. But for some reason, they just haven't been able to connect the dots, right? And so that's what Flipping in Heels has been. And what I wanted to continue to be is to connect the dots and bring the pieces of the puzzle together for these women.
I love what you said about where there's lack, there's opportunity, right? We spend so much time on the gap, You know, we talk about the racial wealth gap. We talk about gender gaps. We talk about gap, lack. And I love that spin on it, because where there is lack, there is opportunity. And, you know, it's interesting, in the Obsidian Catalyst Fund that we created, it started with a research project, which basically identified that there were no scaled developers of color in America. There are very few. That not only were not a lot of folks in the space, but the larger you got, there was nobody there. So you basically had this study that said there's just complete lack. It was that lack, though, that created this huge opportunity to create a fund that could support developers in that space. So I just love the way you flip that on its head. And if we woke up every day, instead of looking around us and seeing where there's gaps or where there's lack or where we're cut out, we looked at each of those as an opportunity, what might get created?
What triggered me is an African proverb. One thing you say, we say, when spiders unite, they can tie up a lion. And I love the idea when you talk about other people connecting the dots, getting together. And I'm looking at my watch right now, and time flies. There's some more here. We just haven't tapped into it. Can you come back to the podcast?
Of course, I would love to. Yeah, okay. So we can talk more about the sales business, because there was a lot of lessons there too with building a team that I didn't know. So yes, I would love to come back.
So how does one get in touch with you? Because we haven't covered that. Get in touch with you, get involved in Flipping in Heels. How does that happen?
So I'm actually very easy to find. That was very intentional. I'm Roshana Scott everywhere. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all social media platforms.
Can you spell Roshana?
RASHAUNASCOTT. So Roshana Scott everywhere, and Flipping in Heels. So we have a big Instagram page, and that's Flipping without the G at the end. But yes, Flipping in Heels. And yeah, you can find us, and all the links are there. You click the link in our bio. That's how you can schedule a call or find out what deals and opportunities we have, what off-market resources, join the membership program, and things like that.
This has been just phenomenal, Roshana. Thank you so much for sharing. Any parting thoughts? Daniel, you look like you're chomping at the bit. You got one last comment.
I think for a lot of listeners, like, when you listen to podcasts, you listen to anything where you're trying to gain knowledge, the story is important. But if we look through the lens of trying to find one nugget on how we can get better, one thing we can implement into our life, into our businesses, into our relationships, I think it's incredibly important. And I think there's a lot of nuggets in this short conversation that I think can impact your world.
So that closes us out for this episode of the Color of Money podcast with Daniel Dixon, Bowman Keady, Emmerich Peace, and our lovely other co-host, Julia Lachey. She's not here today. She trusted the men to carry on without her. However, she must have known Roshana was going to hold us down. So Roshana Scott, thank you so much for being here. And just keep tuning in to the Color Money podcast. We always have something great. We're always going to have a great guest. We're always going to give you some positive inspiration and motivation to go out and do something different with your life and with your money. And that's it. Thanks, guys.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.